Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to joking and talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. And yeah, I'm still enraged over the story of Michael Brooks, and I have heard back from him. He wants to send his well wishes out to everybody on the show who's contacted him recently. Everybody who listens to the show who's contacted him recently. He really appreciates it. And I've published it in High Times today. It's up on hightimes.com on my Radical Rant column. If you want to pass that around, share that as much as you can, and contact the governor there at tn.gov/governor. I'll do everything I can to make this story go viral. I'll contact as many people as I can. I'll publish it through all the networks. I'll reach out to my drug policy friends and colleagues and see if we can't get more attention to this story. This seems like the kind of story where, like I said, at the very least, if you're going to keep marijuana illegal so that this guy has to die, at the very least, give him his kids back. Like, they act as if this guy, Michael Brooks, is, you know, some sort of big drug kingpin who's, you know, stashing, you know, money in the walls and has automatic weapons and deals with the MS-13 and the Mexican mafia. No, this is just a guy. This is just a guy who found out that medical cannabis oil helps him deal with his pain, helps to beat back his hepatitis C, gives him a life worth living. But if you're going to take that from him, my God, at least let his kids be with him. There's no evidence these kids have ever been abused. There's no evidence these parents are anything but nice, kind, responsible, loving parents. And, you know, given that you're going to keep marijuana illegal and he's going to die in a year or two anyway, couldn't you at least let his 2- and 4-year-old maybe have some chance of having a memory of what their father was like? Can bet you're building a couple of little young activists, too, by doing this. You can bet when those little boys, age 2 and age 4, get a little older, and they learn what happened to their father, and they learn how the state condemned him to die when they didn't have to, when he had found a way to live, you can bet that's going to make a couple of hardcore activists, especially when you consider by the time they get to the age of understanding all of this, it's going to be, you know, 8-10 years later, we're going to have legalization in, you know, dozen, maybe 15 states. We're going to have medical in some form just about everywhere. And we'll look back at this cruelty, this unusual punishment, with just, I hope, shame and sorrow and a vow to never let it happen again. And Michael Brooks' story is just one of so many of these stories that I've heard, that I've covered. I haven't even had a chance to cover half of them that I've heard, where people's lives are just turned upside down. And usually in these cases, the people whose lives get turned upside down thought they were doing the right thing by being honest, by being forthright, they sometimes even volunteering that they're involved with marijuana, having no idea that it's such the big deal that they could lose their kids, they could lose everything over this. So many times this happens, and it doesn't need to happen anymore. All right, before I forget, I want to make sure everyone knows that coming up on Monday, I am very honored to be the guest on Midnight in the Desert, the former Art Bell show. You know, Art Bell, the late night, he covers like UFOs and aliens and conspiracy theories and all sorts of interesting kind of stuff. We're going to be on the show. I'm going to be on the show Monday night, 9 p.m. Actually, my segment starts at 9:26 p.m. We'll be going from 9:30 to 1 in the morning Pacific time, talking on Midnight in the Desert with Heather Wade. You can listen live through TuneIn Look for Dark Matter Network on TuneIn. But if you just go to midnightinthedesert.com, they've got all the links for TuneIn. They got a link to listen live through Winamp and on their website. I think they've even got a Facebook feed for it. Plus, there are three different stations you can listen to if you want to catch the program. Actual terrestrial radio stations, KCAA in Loma Linda, California. Also, which I believe KCAA also carries Lanny Swerdlow's show, if I'm remembering correctly. But KCAA 1050 AM and 106.5 FM in Loma Linda, California. KNYE 95.1 FM in Pahrump, Nevada. So we'll be in the Las Vegas area on the air. And KJMRLP 97.7 FM in Chatteroy, Washington. That's a low power station, so you'd have to be pretty close to Chatteroy to be able to catch that. Link to the show. Show link again, midnightinthedesert.com. Midnightinthedesert.com. And I'll give you the link to the interview that I did yesterday with Michael Brooks. You can find that at rad-r.us/Michael Brooks in title case. Stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to give you a little more details on that grisly murder story that we led the news with. Four men killed over marijuana deals gone bad. That's a headline you don't get in Oregon.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on the Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
As a formerly incarcerated person, I know firsthand all the ways that we are disenfranchised when we are run through the system. Every day I work to help people regain their rights and dignity, but the fight is far from over. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You are listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry, no food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 9.5 after the hour here from Delta 9 Studios in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon, where it's about 80 degrees outside, and the sky is clear, and it's a beautiful day. Looking forward to a great weekend here. We got a full house at Delta 9. We are just booked like crazy. Today we achieved superhost status on the Airbnb platform, which gives me now special powers. I can clean toilets with my laser vision now. I don't know what superhost does. But we're now superhost, so that's cool. Also, we've got new photographs. We had a professional photographer come in on Wednesday or Tuesday and take some shots. So we got new photographs online, and I'll be putting those all together from some new brochures and stuff. So if you are looking to come to Portland, Oregon, you need a cannabis-friendly place to stay, Delta 9 House and Studios is the place to be. Check it out at delta9house.com. And like I said, the rooms are full. We can accommodate three people per room. We've got a queen bed and an air mattress in each room, twin air mattress. And so we've got these, and it's wild because we got in each room three young guys. Like, if any of these guys are older than 26, I'd be shocked, right? So it's been fun, and they've been getting along, meeting each other and talking and heading out to Portland and having a good time. But I got to tell you, the dab torch has been working overtime here at Delta 9 with six young guys in the place. I got to tell you. All right, so let me get back to that story we led with about the murders in Pennsylvania. Okay, so this guy, Cosmo DiNardo, he's age 20, has confessed to the killing of four young men. He killed them each separately after selling them marijuana and then subsequently feeling cheated or threatened during three drug transactions. So I'm imagining maybe there's a one with one guy, another transaction with another guy, and maybe a third transaction with two of the guys. It doesn't really make it clear, but mathematically, I think that's how it have to be, right? So three different drug transactions. He burned their bodies. Three of them he burned inside of a drum at his family's farm in Pennsylvania. They've arrested another guy, or they've brought in another guy, Sean Kratz, age 20, alleged to be a possible co-conspirator with DiNardi. Now, one of the men was killed on July 5th. The other three were killed on July 7th. The source told AP, quote, every death was related to a purported drug transaction, and at the end of each one, there's a killing. And recently, DiNardo was seen exiting the Bucks County Courthouse. This was Thursday evening when the Action News folks got a quote from him. Let's see if that'll play for us. From Twitter.com, 6ABC Action News in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And no, it's not going to play. Okay, this is typical. All right, thank you, Huffington Post. Anyway, so the this guy, okay, the thing that's his victims, first of all, are, let's get their names. I got to go up fire. There you go. He admitted to killing Jimmy Patrick, Tom Mio, Dean Benacciaro, and Mark Sturgis. Okay, Jimmy, Tom, Dean, and Mark. And Patrick, Jimmy Patrick was age 19. The other men were age 19, 22, and 21. They all vanished, you know, they were all missing, and so there was missing persons, and it was a big scare there around the Bucks County area. They've only identified one set of the remains belonging to Fanacero, one of the 19-year-olds. The prosecutors in this case have indicated that DiNardo had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. His behavior had been altered after he suffered a head injury in an ATV accident a few months ago. And he had a gun charge. He had he was held with a $1 million bond until Tuesday for an unrelated weapons charge. This guy was able to get a gun despite the fact that he had an involuntary mental health hold against him and a history of mental illness, right? He had been held on a $1 million bond not even 24 hours after he got out on bail on Tuesday. He was arrested for stealing one of the victim's cars. And for that, they've put him back in, and now he's on a $5 million bail. Now, in admitting, you know, in confessing to the four murders, the prosecution agreed to take the death penalty off the table. But once again, this illustrates how an illegal market works. Now, I know some might say, well, Russ, this guy was 20. And his co-conspirator was 20. And two of the guys that were killed were 19. You know, one was 22, one was 21, the other two were 19. So What does legalization have to do with this? When legalization would be age 21 and up. Well, what it does have to do with this is at least Sturgis and Mio, the 22 and 21-year-old, would not have had to go to an illegal drug transaction to get their weed. They'd have had a legal store where they could have bought it. As for what might have happened with the 19-year-olds trying to buy the weed from the 20-year-olds, that still could have happened under our current legalization schemes, because they all say you got to be 21 years old. And so that just maintains that half of the demographic that is the largest demographic of pot smokers has to stay on the illegal market. From age 18 to age 23, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, that 6-year age group, at each year, you've got more than 20% of the people in that age group that use pot regularly. Over 20% in that age group at each age, like 20.1, 20.4, 20.6, that kind of stuff, right? So when you make a law that says that the age for pot smoking is age 21, you're saying half of the greatest use group, ages 20, the 21, 22, and 23-year-olds, they're good, but the other half, the 18, 19, and 20s, they got to stay on the illegal market. Now, I understand people have the argument that, number one, you can't legalize under age 21 because alcohol's 21. And politically speaking, it's going to be really hard to convince people that an illegal drug should be easier to get than alcohol. Now, I know once you legalize it, it wouldn't be an illegal drug. I'm talking about the framing. When you're trying to get this passed, you know, you're trying to tell voters, hey, let's take something that we used to say was, you know, deadly dangerous Schedule One drug, you know, just like heroin, and make it something 18-year-olds can get when they can't even get alcohol. That's going to be hard to pull off. What will help that is the more people understand that marijuana is safer than alcohol, which about a quarter of the people do. When you do the surveys, it's like about a quarter of the people know it's safer than alcohol, and another half say that it's no worse than alcohol, which, you know, is kind of an insult to marijuana. Marijuana is far less harmful than alcohol, but saying that it's about equal, at least that's a start. And then you got the other quarter that crazily think marijuana is more harmful than alcohol. But the more they understand that, and the more they start doing the math in their head thinking, well, wait a minute, you know what? If my kid for his senior party, senior skip day, was smoking weed and not drinking alcohol, maybe they wouldn't get in a massive drunk driving accident, or maybe they wouldn't suffer a binge drinking alcohol overdose. Maybe the worst thing that might happen to them is they get really freaking high and eat up all of the snack foods in the house. Maybe more people start making that calculus in their head and start realizing, wait a minute, if the age for marijuana was 18, those kids could have legal access to marijuana. We'd know that what they're getting has been tested and it isn't laced with anything. We'd know that they're not going to get into gun battles and have to deal with shady characters to get it. And we'd be able to have some control over how much they'd be able to get. Right now, under the scarcity of marijuana, these guys, these 19-year-olds, go to the DiNardo guy trying to buy quarter pounds, trying to get massive amounts. Because who knows when's the next time you're going to be able to get any. You're going to be able to find any. But if marijuana is available at the store, and you know that anytime you want to go get some, you can go get some, you reduce that need to go get the massive amount. And sure, we could even graduate it. You could even say, look, age 21 above, you can possess an ounce. Age 20, 19 and 18, you can only possess a quarter ounce. You could work around it all sorts of different ways. But to me, fundamentally, when you really get down to it, it's a matter of what is an 18-year-old? We're going to trust an 18-year-old to pick our president. We're going to trust an 18-year-old to pick up a gun and defend us in a war. We're going to trust an 18-year-old, well, decreasingly so, but we're going to trust an 18-year-old to smoke cigarettes in some states. My state of Oregon has just raised the age to 21. California has as well. I think Washington's on its way. Hawaii's done it. Bad idea. But again, yeah, I got to go. The tobacco thing, all you're doing is taking a bunch of 18, 19, and 20-year-old smokers and making them now addicts that have to go on a black market to get their fix. But I digress. If we're going to trust 18-year-olds to defend our country and pick our president, by God, I think we should be able to trust them to be able to smoke a joint. And given that it's a safer alternative to alcohol and might steer their lives in a better direction, we should do it right now.
We don't need no stinking budget. Oh, no.
All right, that sound means it's 4:20 here in the Pacific Time Zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. Smoke them if you got them. I got them. I'm smoking them. We'll be right back. If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
This November, whether you see the words medical marijuana on your ballot or not, the issue is there. From the halls of Congress to your state capitol or city hall, politicians are already making decisions on medical marijuana policy on your behalf. This election, make sure they are representing you. Every vote is a vote for medical marijuana.
Visit votemedicalmarijuana.org today.
The marijuana agenda, like the alcohol agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Shanna, your heads are Dolphin, PKA Dirtball.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. And we're just going to do a whole bunch of quick news stories here in the next couple of segments. It is the weekend coming up, and so we're going to wind up with all the news stories that have fallen through the cracks I haven't had a chance to get to throughout the rest of the shows. We were just talking about Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and that terrible murder of four young men over marijuana deals. We take a look now to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, in the center of the state, Amish country, where 102 people have overdosed on synthetic cannabinoids in 3 days. Now, first of all, I always have to say it that way, because in the news report here on WNEP ABC 16, They're saying synthetic marijuana. That's in the headline. That's in the story lead. 102 people overdosed on synthetic marijuana. Folks, there's no such thing as synthetic marijuana. Well, there is such a thing as synthetic marijuana. I actually saw it at one of our trade show events. It was like a paper mache or some sort of, I don't know what it was made out of, but it looked like a beautiful crystally bud, but it's a necklace. It's not plant material at all. I don't know what they made it out of, but it's beautiful. That would be synthetic marijuana, right? A dried flowering top from a cannabis plant prepared for smoking. What they're talking about are synthetic cannabinoids, right? They're synthetic cannabinoids that they're dealing with. These JWH synthetics that were made for laboratory purposes to hyperstimulate our endocannabinoid system. Because when you're trying to test these things, you're trying to do some laboratory research, you don't have 20 years to see how something's going to work out. You got to pump that stuff as hard as you can into a rat, you know, that's only going to live a few months or whatever, and then try to figure out what it does. So these aren't designed for human consumption. They're not designed for the practical effects you'd get out of cannabinoids. But since marijuana is illegal in Pennsylvania and lots of other places, and because marijuana is tested for on drug tests in Pennsylvania and everywhere else, people turn to this synthetic crap so they can get the high they want that they're looking for, still pass their drug tests, or at least have access to some sort of high. So according to C. Robert May, the director of Lancaster Emergency Medical Services, by the way, they note in the first paragraph, none of the overdoses were fatal. Okay. So May says, quote, heroin is normally the issue, but in the last week, there's been an overdose of synthetic marijuana. The assumption is that heroin is not readily available, so people are turning to K2, the spice, the synthetic cannabinoids. So the overdoses happened in the morning of July 7th through the morning of July 10th. By the following Friday, July 14th, there was a total of 158 overdose patients involved in emergency calls. Some calls involved 2 to 4 patients at once, with a few patients repeating in a span of a few hours. Quote, this past weekend, we responded to one patient 9 times in 24 hours. So in the past 6 months in Lancaster County, heroin overdoses were averaging 8 a day. Over the last week, emergency services were responding to 25 synthetic cannabinoid overdoses in a day, about 1 an hour. In public bathrooms, parking lots, residential homes, on the street, and in parks, May said, it's all over the place. So this is, again, the problem of prohibition. And it's so frustrating sometimes for us to be on our side and to understand what marijuana really is. A fairly benign, naturally occurring substance that mimics another naturally occurring substance in our bodies, has a fairly light high when you compare it to other things you can get high on, has a fairly low load for dependency or withdrawal symptoms, something like about caffeine. You know, you get a little irritated if you can't get any. And again, we're talking about just recreational use. I understand medical users who go without suffer, but just in general is what we're talking here. Those of us who know what marijuana really is and what it really does and how it really acts, it's so frustrating because you're like, can you not see these people just want to get high? They just want some weed? Can you not see that they just want to alleviate whatever pain or boredom or ennui they're experiencing in their lives? They just want a little kick. People are going to get their kicks. And if you don't let them get it with marijuana, they're going to get it with K2. If you don't let them get it with oxycodone, they're going to get it with heroin that's laced with fentanyl. If you don't let them get it with... people are going to want their kicks. If we were any sort of sane society, Jerry Garcia said something along these lines long ago. If we were any sort of sane society, we'd recognize that there are people who like to do drugs, and there always have been throughout human history. And so our goal of drug policy wouldn't be to try to stop them from doing drugs, wouldn't be to try to tell them how terrible drugs are, wouldn't be to try to make drugs illegal so worse drugs come in their place. No, a sane public policy would be recognizing that people do drugs, so let's figure out how to make it as safe as possible. It's the kind of policy we have with cars. We recognize that people like to drive cars. They like to get in cars and go places. Sometimes they're getting in their cars for a legitimate purpose. They need to get from point A to point B for business or to visit family or whatever, or to buy goods or whatever it might be, conduct commerce. But they've got a legitimate reason for getting in that car. Other people are just recreational car users. They like to get in their car just to drive. Hey, let's go for a drive. A Sunday drive. Let's go see the road. Let's go on a road trip. Let's go on a drive. So we got recreational drivers and we've got legitimate drivers. But in both cases, we allow people to drive. We love to let people drive despite the fact that we know with absolute certainty that tens of thousands of people will die because we let people drive. About 37,000. Maybe it's not that high anymore, but it's in the tens of thousands. Lots of people will die because we let them drive. And not only that, it's not just the people who are doing the driving who will die. They might hit other people who are driving, who are driving quite well, minding their own business, of no harm or concern to others, and bam, they get hit by somebody else and they die. Even worse, sometimes those drivers hit pedestrians. These are people that didn't even choose to drive. They chose not to participate in that activity, and yet they got killed by it. But we accept that. We accept that in our society, we couldn't. It'd be ridiculous to try to tell people they couldn't drive. It'd be insane. If we made a prohibition on driving, it would just be insane. And we understand that, yeah, there's going to be some people that die because of it. But what we'll do is we'll legalize driving and we'll regulate it heavily. We'll have all sorts of safety requirements for the manufacturers of cars to make sure the things don't blow up, that if they wreck, there's safety belts, there's airbags. We'll have all sorts of things to guarantee there's not harmful, noxious odors from the engine coming into the passenger cab or anything like that. We'll regulate the manufacturer of the product itself, and we'll regulate where you can use the product, right? We'll make roads, and we'll have rules about how you can drive on those roads. There'll be speed limits and stop signs and yield signs and merge signs and all that kind of lines on the road, different types of lines to tell you where and how to drive and what's allowable in that specific zone. And we'll have training and education for the drivers. We'll make them go to driving school. We'll make them take a test. We'll make them prove to a neutral observer that they can handle their driving. This system has worked pretty damn well. In fact, it's worked so well that since like the 1990s, fewer and fewer and fewer people year after year are dying because of both recreational and legitimate driving. We've really figured out a way how to regulate driving. Now, it's not perfect. Not perfect at all. There's still tens of thousands of people that die because of driving. But can you imagine how many people would die because of driving if we didn't have those lines on the road? If we didn't have any speed limits or the stop signs or the yield signs? If we didn't require the car manufacturer? Anybody could just make any old car, just slap together a wheel and an engine. You can sell that to anybody you like. And you can, anybody, any kid, any adult, anybody trained or not, they can get behind the wheel. And there's no real roads or organization. You can just pretty much drive wherever you want to. Except it's all illegal. Don't do that. Don't do it. There, you can't make cars. You can't sell cars. You can't drive cars. And then nowhere can cars be driven. How many more tens of thousands of people you think would die then? So why don't we have a drug policy that's like our car policy? We'll regulate where you can take drugs. We'll have guidelines on how to take the drugs. We'll make sure that the stuff, the product itself is pure and not it's uncontaminated and not adulterated and we'll make sure that you have the accessories for using the drug, the needle or the whatever else you need, the pipe that are clean and not contaminated by anybody else's use of it. We'll make sure that you can buy the drugs. You can get the drug. You don't have to see a criminal to get them. You don't have to become a criminal yourself to manufacture them. There'll be access to the drugs. We'll make sure that if you want to use the drugs, that you have education about how to use the drugs. And in the case of the really harmful drugs, maybe we even have some sort of licensing scheme for that. Maybe we have some sort of requirement of education, requirement of hands-on training, let's say, that comes along with that. You know, kind of like how we have regular driver's license anyone can get, but then you got commercial licenses, and then you got those commercial licenses when guys are hauling, you know, hazardous material. I mean, the possibilities are endless, and I'm not suggesting any one of these is a solution I'd necessarily endorse, but it'd be better than prohibition. It'd make a lot more sense. We'd recognize that, like cars, drugs are a thing that people enjoy. Sometimes those drugs have legitimate use. Sometimes those drugs have recreational use. But if we don't regulate the places and the ways and the product itself, like we do cars, we can only continue to make the effects of the drugs worse. There's always going to be people overdosing. It's always going to be people selling illegally. Always going to be some sort of violence associated with those illegal sales. That will never go away. There will always be people that become addicted, become dependent on those drugs. That will never go away. Just like car wrecks never go away. Just like the need for speed limits never goes away. Just like people who break those speed limits never goes away. But we reduce it as much as we can. We bring it down to manageable levels. We learn from what works and we reapply that in better ways. We observe and react and adapt. No, just say no. Just say no. No driving. Whatever you do, don't drive. And no roads. No using roads. And ignore all those road signs.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Did you know that each day in the state of Georgia, more than 6 people are diagnosed with HIV? As a person providing life-saving services to those most at risk, I know HIV is preventable. We need more people in this fight, which is why I want you to join me this October in Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're not high. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We need to say, as Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Don't do it. There's no excuse for this.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle from the Marijuana Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barak has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Almost 38 after the hour, and you know, we told you that story last week, or maybe it was a couple weeks ago, about Marijuana Policy Project losing their bank account that they've had ever since their founding in 1995. The bank account was with PNC Bank. It had never been a problem in the past, but PNC Bank went and closed MPP's account because MPP is the Marijuana Policy Project, and they take donations from people that are involved in the marijuana industry. Therefore, they're laundering money for the marijuana industry. Ah, right. They're worried about the federal implications is what it is. PNC Bank is, and who knows if they've been contacted, if they've been threatened, if somebody's putting strong arm on them from the Sessions, you know, Department of Justice. I guess it might be Treasury, though, in that case. But regardless, if someone's putting the pressure on them from Washington, let's say, we haven't heard one way or another, but they went and dropped MPP's bank accounts. Now, that's a kind of a tenuous little thread of logic that they're espousing there, right? Is that, well, MPP takes money from dispensaries. Dispensaries sell marijuana. Therefore, they're one step in the Kevin Bacon thing away from being marijuana sellers themselves, right? One degree of separation from being marijuana sellers themselves. Okay, so you got a little thread, a tiny little thread of logic there. I don't agree with it, but at least you could point to that, right? Well, now PNC Bank has closed the account for Ohio Normal. Now, that's a little harder thread to connect, right? Because Ohio doesn't have legal marijuana, and the medical marijuana they've got isn't selling actual marijuana. It's the cannabinoid stuff, right? And to my knowledge, there's no support for Ohio Normal coming from any of these dispensaries. Could be wrong. I don't have their financials in front of me. But if there's not, there's not any, you know, Ohio medical marijuana dispensary money flowing toward Ohio Normal, how do you connect that thread to say, oh, you're 1 degree of separation away from a marijuana seller? What this is becoming, folks, I mean, not becoming, I'm saying what this is PNC Bank closing these accounts because they advocate for legal marijuana. This is a First Amendment issue here. These banks, I mean, it would be hard to prove. Because, again, they get the out of, well, it's federally illegal. It's federally illegal. We can discriminate against you. Ha ha. All right, they can always go back to that. But really, if this were anything else, this would be First Amendment infringement. This would be closing down their accounts because they don't agree with their political speech. Because MPP and Normal do not sell marijuana. They do not grow marijuana. They do not possess marijuana as organizations. Personally, sure. But as organizations, no, right? So what else could it be but the fact that they advocate for marijuana to be legal? Now, over this involves Sharon Neufer, who, full disclosure, a friend of mine. I've known her from the Normal organization for years. She lives in Lodi, Ohio. And she finally found a bank, branch of Wells Fargo, that would accept their business. It's over 2 hours away. 2 hour drive now to be able to make the deposits and do whatever else, right? And they've had this for years. You know, they've had these accounts just like MPP. Have had these accounts for years. And according to Cher, she says, "We are not a dispensary and we do not take money from any of that," end quote. This is, you know, when people said, you know, it didn't matter who you vote for, they're both the same, it doesn't matter. Well, this is where it matters. The people have also said, well, they're not doing anything yet. They haven't actually did. Well, this is something. You know, they don't have to actually pass laws. They don't have to actually conduct raids for them to be doing something. Merely having these people that are so weed hating, so cannabophobic, so bigoted against us, sends that message, sets that tone that makes these banks go, oh shit, man, things are getting hanky out here. I don't know. These guys are saying a bunch of stuff about weed. They don't really like the weed. We don't want to be first on their list. And so things change without anybody having to pass a law or actually conduct a raid or anything, just by setting the tone. That has changed things. That has affected the marijuana industry. So I want to make sure we got that story out. Another story, let's go to the good news side of things. The good news side of things is that Michigan for 2018 is way ahead of schedule. They've already got more than 100,000 signatures. They have a total of 180 days. Now, this was the thing that caught them up last year, the 2016 election. They couldn't get MI legalized on the ballot because the state went and pulled some shenanigans again with this 180-day rule. They got this rule in Michigan that you got from the minute you start your signatures, you have 180 days after that to collect them all. After 180 days, signatures spoil, I guess. You got to seal them in Ziploc baggies and put them in the freezer. Otherwise, they spoil, right? So these signatures, I don't know any other excuse, right? So for 180 days, the signatures are good. So what happened last year, 2016, is they had collected more than enough signatures in Michigan to get on the ballot in 2018. But those signatures extended over the 180-day span. Now, the review for that was like, well, look, we want to appeal this because, you know, these people that signed that are over 180 days old, it's not their fault. And they still have a right to have their voice heard. That's part of our democracy. You're infringing on their democratic right to have their voice heard, to petition their government for a redress of grievances. That's a First Amendment problem. But they did not prevail in that argument in court. They'd even argued that, hey, look, in this appeal, because what the excuse is that after 180 days, statutorily speaking, we don't know if someone's moved, if they still live in Michigan, is they in their right voting district, are they registered, yada, yada. It's a bunch of BS, but MI Legalize even said, look, we'll even deal with that BS. Let us appeal and we'll go through this process of electronically getting on the databases and proving that, hey, this person's really this person that signed it. And that's the state pulled another bit of shenanigans and said, no, you can't use the electronic ways. You have to use the way it's written up in the law, where you have to go to the county clerk and you have to put in a form to get the record. And that record goes in, and within 14 or 20 days or whatever the number of days, then they'll send you back a form for each signature. Right? The means existed to electronically settle the question. Boom, like that. But on purpose, the Michigan legislature said, no. You're going to have to, or was it the courts? I'm not exactly. It was the Michigan courts. Like, no. The way the law says, you have to do it by hand, because this law was written back in '60s or whenever, before we had computer databases. So anyway, the long story short of it is Michigan got screwed. Michigan got screwed by this 180-day rule. So this time around, they're like, well, we're going to get screwed by this 180-day rule. We're going to come in and knock it out. And we're going to come with professional signature gathers, and we're going to kick some ass and get on the ballot for 2018. And that's what's happening. They have to collect 252,523 signatures. But really, that means they need about 350,000. Because you always got to figure that signatures are going to be invalidated. Can't read someone's writing. They're not a registered voter. It was someone from out of state. Whatever the excuse. Every campaign considers that. And you want to get like 40% more of the, 30 to 40% more signatures than you need. So they need about 350,000. They started on Memorial Day to gather signatures. So first week of June, last week of May, right? They're already over 100,000. So that's within a 6-7 week span. They got 100,000 signatures. So according to their spokesman for the Coalition to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol, Josh Hovey, said, quote, if we can keep up this momentum, we will have all signatures in 4 months rather than the 6 months required by state law. Now, what the legalization would do in Michigan, if it's on the ballot for 2018, possession, cultivation, and use of cannabis for adults 21 and older. So we'd have home grow. We'd legalize the cultivation of industrial hemp. People don't recognize that sometimes, don't think that you legalize marijuana and it automatically legalizes hemp. Washington State learned that lesson the hard way. They legalized marijuana in 2012. Wasn't until 2016 they legalized industrial hemp. The legalization would also legalize businesses that cultivate, process, test, transport, and sell marijuana. So there'd be pot shops. Legalization would protect consumers with proper testing and safety regulations for retail marijuana. And it would be taxed at retail levels, 10% excise tax and 6% sales tax to support K-12 public schools, roads, and local governments. Now, it'd be nice if it gets through that way. But what we've seen coming out of Massachusetts and some of the other states that have legalized is the people put forth the ballot measure. It gets passed by a large majority. And then the legislature goes, oh, no, you people don't know what you're doing here with that. We can't do that. That tax rate's too low. So it'd be nice if we stay at the 10% excise and 6% sales tax. But you can bet there's going to be some Michigan lawmakers that once they see the gravy train of marijuana money rolling in, they're going to want to raise that tax a bit. But this is good news. Good news to have yet another initiative that is home grow, pot shops, no per se DUID. Beautiful. Glad to see that. So 2018 looks like it's going to go. Michigan, I'm betting on Missouri making it for their medical marijuana. Wyoming going for it. Could actually happen. Oklahoma, I believe, is already on the ballot for medical marijuana. So we could have four more states for our next marijuana election night that could be in the mix. And then consider New Jersey is going to legalize in 2018 if this Democrat wins, and it looks like he's going to win the gubernatorial race. Delaware, their governor or legislators have already said, yeah, it's a done deal. It's going to happen in 2018. Vermont kicked the can down the road from 2017, but they're going to go ahead in 2018 and most likely legalize. So we've already got right there seven states that could be in the mix for marijuana election night 2018. What a hell of a job Project Sam's doing, huh? They're doing such a great job stopping legalization. Ever since Project Sam started, we've quadrupled the number of legal states. We now have 29 medical marijuana states. We now have only four states in America where there's no legal form of marijuana. Only four. Idaho, Kansas, South Dakota, Nebraska. That's it. In every other state, there's at least CBD oil where its possession has been legalized. One out of five people lives in a legal state. Another two out of five lives in a medical state. And another one out of five lives in a CBD state. We're winning, folks.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Did you know that in Georgia, one in 13 adults is in jail or prison or on parole or probation? As a mother and as a professional, I advocate for access to drug treatment instead of incarceration. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Come lend your voice to the fight. Register now at reformconference.org.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Police for Reform with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. Arr. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's our final segment of the week. Thanks for joining us. And a reminder, next week we've got all new segments coming up on the Marijuana Agenda. It'll be our Eastern rotation, so our regional focus will be on the Eastern time zone. On Monday, we've got our ACEs patient-focused update with Americans for Safe Access, followed by the Northeast Cannabis Chronicle. We'll spotlight what's happening in the Mid-Atlantic and the great New England states. On Tuesday, we have our Expanded Mind segment where we deal with the ongoing research into psychedelics. So we'll take a look at that. Plus, on Tuesday, Shark Sessions with the Marijuana Show, we take a look at entrepreneurship and investment. On Wednesday, our Hemp Day Hump Day update will get us all the latest on industrial hemp, followed by our Southeast Cannabis Chronicle, where we talk about the great American South and what's happening down there. On Thursday, Voice of the Industry with National Cannabis Industries Association. We'll learn more about the business of cannabis, followed by Cannabis Sports Medicine with the Gridiron Cannabis Foundation. More on athletes and their use of cannabis for medical purposes. And then on Friday of next week, our Drug Policy Reform Update with the Drug Policy Alliance, followed by our Government at Work segment where we speak with the lawmakers who are changing the laws with respect to marijuana. That's all coming up next week on the Marijuana Agenda. Learn more at mjagenda.com. Also, reminder that you can get the free Cannabis Headline News podcast. It's absolutely free at news.mjagenda.com. Get the top five stories in marijuana in just 5 minutes with the Cannabis Headline News at news.mjagenda.com. BKAObserver.com. All right. So to close up shop for the day, we turn to the Washington Post and Christopher Ingraham, one of my favorite writers out there. And I just have to read this as written. And forgive me for the poor impersonation. Okay, I'll do my best. President Donald Trump told reporters on Air Force One on Wednesday that his proposed border wall with Mexico would have to be transparent to prevent Americans from being struck and killed by 60-pound sacks of drugs tossed over from the Mexican side.
One of the things with the wall you need is transparency. You have to be able to see through it, Trump said.
He continued,
in other words, if you can't see through that wall, so it could be a steel wall with openings, but you have to have openings because you have to see what's on the other side of the wall. And I'll give you an example. As horrible as it sounds, when they throw the large sacks of drugs over, and if you have people on the other side of the wall, you don't see them, they hit you on the head with 60 pounds of stuff, it's over. As crazy as that sounds, you need transparency through that wall.
I cracked myself up with that. That's one of the worst Donald Trump impersonations I've ever heard. It's like I'm doing a bad impersonation of Trevor Noah doing a bad impersonation of Donald Trump. But yeah, Trump says the wall has to be transparent so we can see the Mexicans launching the weed with catapults over the wall. Now, that's not an exaggeration. That has happened, right? We actually have seized catapults and found Mexicans using catapults to launch bales of weed over the wall. Yeah. Absolutely, but like, how are you going to, the launch isn't from like right next to the wall, right? You don't put this catapult like 10 feet away and then whoop, you know, slip that weed over the border. These catapults are 150 feet away, right? You make the wall as transparent as you want. You're not going to be able to pull this off. And this is just crazy. And the other thing that's funny about that is he's been telling, he told reporters,
we have some incredible designs for the wall. It'll be the best wall ever. It'll be a great wall.
Trump has also said that the wall needs to have solar panels. Needs to be a solar energy collecting wall that's transparent. Okay. Do you know how solar panels work? Have you ever seen a transparent solar panel? Do you know what transparent solar panels are called? Windows. Jesus. Maybe it's going to be a big glass wall. Maybe it'll be like those sliding doors in apartment buildings, right? Just out to the balcony. It'll be a sliding glass door wall.
That's our solar panels. We're getting beautiful views. We can see all the catapults. We can see the catapults launching the 60 pounds of drugs, okay? We see the drugs, okay? And you know they're launching them. They're launching the drugs. We can see them. We can see them through our sliding glass wall.
Oh, the times we're living in. I really want to get into a time machine, right? I want to get into a time machine, go back to the 80s. And I want to explain to people in the middle of, let's say, 1986, 87, when we're super, super tough on drugs and Len Bias had just died and everybody's getting all, you know, mandatory minimum crazy and crack disparity crazy, right? Crack babies. Ah, I want to take a time machine back to then and explain to them that, hey, man, weed's legal in like 8 states in the future and medical, people can get it for medical in like 29 states in the future. And people are like, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. But, you know, that guy, Donald Trump. Well, folks, I have to leave it on that note. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget to write to michaelbrooks2013@gmail.com. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seat, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.